White Rockin' Entertainment, podcast number 632. That's a lot of podcasts.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello, and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment. And by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our very own Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
Well, John, it's been a weird day, been a weird week, been a weird weekend, but we made it here to Monday night. How are you doing?
Weird, I guess. I'm doing fine, thank you. Hanging in there. Yeah. Doing normal summer stuff.
Yep. And the clock keeps ticking. The days keep going by, and summer creeps along. It's late May, and we've got a summer ahead of us before, I guess, fall practice begins in, what, August?
Yeah. We're approaching that wonderful time of the year known as preview magazines on the shelf.
That's right.
Should be any day now. Looking forward to that.
Yep. What are they going to say about us? What do you think? I'm not asking what do you think we're going to do or what do I think we're going to do. We have that comes up in July usually. What are those magazines going to say about? They're not going to think a lot of us, are they?
No.
I mean, they're going to have us like, what, 9, 10, no, out of 14, 10, 11, 12, 13, yes. Somewhere in there?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. We got our work cut out for us this fall, basically. But until then, we've got other things going on. We have a show note up front. It is the summer, or more or less the summer, effectively the summer. And so things are going on. I will be away on vacation starting Wednesday. And so do not look for a Wishbone on Monday, Tuesday of next week, unless something catastrophic happens and John and I have to record a phone call or something. Because otherwise...
It's Memorial Day. Enjoy your Memorial Day.
Yeah, exactly. We will not be doing a Memorial Day show. In fact, I forgot that it's Memorial Day because, yeah, we'll be down at the beach, and I'm looking forward on Sunday to somehow watching the Indy 500 and the Monaco Grand Prix while sipping a tropical drink at the beach. That is my kind of plan right there, and I love when a plan like that comes together. That is my plan. Sipping a nice tropical drink, watching the Indy 500, Monaco Parade Grand Prix, and enjoying the sun and the surf. That should be really good. So, yeah, so don't look for a show unless something monumental happens. And hopefully, as they always say, Lord willing and the creek don't rise. We're not like trying to fire our coach or getting on probation or something crazy. So,
we should release a 45-minute episode of just the sound of the waves.
Yes, here's what we have on our mind this week. That's right. Yeah, that's it. So, yeah, that'll be good. So that we'll be doing. But we'll be back. We'll be back strong 2 weeks from today, more or less, with another episode. But anyway, tonight, I guess we have to kick things off with... Get your sonic screwdriver out, John. Hop in the TARDIS.
Once again, the portal blowing in our direction.
It doesn't usually flow this way. It's like we've had a valve on it and it only flows away, but we're getting some backflow. That's good.
Backflow is not good, but this is good. We got a transfer in a defensive lineman from Memphis named Morris Joseph.
Okay.
Is transferring to Auburn. He's originally from Texas. You know, signed somewhere else, went to community college, then went to play the last couple years in Memphis, but still got some time left. Had about 40 tackles last year. He's about 6'2", 275. So kind of a shorter, thicker interior guy, but, a sturdy guy that can be active and make some plays. And, again, we talked about the defensive line a couple weeks ago in our position previews. And I think he's, you know, I was concerned a little bit about depth beyond the, you know, the first two lines. We're always going to need more guys. And the guys behind that were, you know, true freshmen or completely unproven guys. And so I think this guy gives us some solid depth if we have some injuries or, you know, as a rotation piece in games where we need more people. So
we're playing a 3-4. That's basically a nose guard and two defensive ends, right? Or do they call them defensive tackles? It's defensive ends, right?
It's defensive ends, but it, like in the 3-4, the outside linebackers line up outside of the tackles.
Right.
And these guys generally line up between the tackles and the guards. But they can shift over and line up outside the tackle too. But generally they line up, you know, between the tackles and the guards, and the nose guard kind of winds up straight over the center over or the slightly center. Off the center between the center and one of the guards. So with the outside linebackers on the outside. Whereas in the old 4-3 we used to play, one of the edge rusher guys would be, or both would line up outside the tackles on the defensive line, but they don't really do that. We don't really do that much at Auburn right now. So
what would this guy play in a 3-4 then? Is he going to be a nose guard or is he going to be one of those ends?
I think in my mind, he's about the same size as the Michael Harris guy we got from Kansas, who kind of plays one of the stronger edge pieces. He's basically a defensive tackle that can also play some edge, but kind of a little bit of a strong edge piece like a Marlon. I'm not saying this guy's Marlon Davidson, but that kind of player.
Right. Okay. So, well, that's good. Yeah. It is interesting. It seems like so many of our transfers coming in are for the defense. It was that way last year.
It was.
Kind of doing that again this year. I hope we can find some weapons for the offense in there somewhere.
It is, and I want to follow up on something we talked about last week, which was the major. There was a question in the mailbag about majors, and I went back and did some more research and listened to some more stuff about that. And that is a real issue at Auburn, that there are certain majors that other colleges have that Auburn does not, and it results in a thing where some players who want to come to Auburn and the coaches want them to come to Auburn, academically it doesn't work out well for them. They lose like a whole year of eligibility of academic time. And so as you know, as a college professor, majors don't just happen. You wave your hands and you create a new major.
No.
So that's kind of the positions that Auburn has caught itself in where, you know, I think the coaching staff wishes they would create some of these majors they have at other colleges, and Auburn isn't doing that and hasn't done that. And it is, I think there's some people who say, oh, those are excuses or whatever, but I think it's probably the truth based on what I know about Auburn's majors and how they align with other colleges. And it creates issues when you have this kind of situation. So
that was what messed up our transfer from Arkansas on the basketball team.
Desi Sills. It was that issue, exactly.
Yeah, too bad. Yeah, we could have used him. In hindsight, yeah, that really sucks. So what other areas are we still targeting, and how many more chances do we have in terms of scholarships, in terms of time and deadlines? There's a lot of factors that go into this.
Yeah. Again, I think we got a few more weeks. I think the players are in the portal where, you know, we can take them. And I think we have a few more spots if we want to. I think, you know, another wide receiver, if there was one out there that was a difference maker, I think we'd consider it, right? And not have to be a star, but, you know, a guy that we thought could contribute.
Right.
I think we'd look at that. Beyond that, an edge rusher, maybe, again, I think that's a position where we might look at something, which we'll talk about them tonight, and you'll see why I'm listing that one. But
it just seems like you can never get too many of them.
No. And again, there's no monsters out there. There's no Carl Lawson out there in the thing.
Right.
But, Echo Leota was a great transfer. That guy's a good player.
Oh, absolutely.
So yeah. I'd be delighted if we got, you know, a poor man's version of that.
Yeah. All right. So any other transfer portal related news?
No, there's other guys out there we're talking to and that are visiting, but nothing immediate.
Yeah, I would definitely like maybe one. I feel like tight end is the only position I feel remotely good about right now. You know, I mean, quarterback is just kind of a mystery, and we're not going to know anything there for a while because we can't. And then running back is thin. good on top, but thin.
Yeah.
Receivers thin, and there is no top, really. And then offensive line is what it is, which is older but not necessarily greater. And then, it's just a weird position to be in.
Yeah. I mean, again, I feel like defensive line, the starting group is really good. And linebackers, I feel like we have some good talent. But and I think there's some good depth there. I don't think we need another linebacker.
Right, right. All right, well, we'll see how it happens, how it goes. I feel like it just every time I feel like, okay, the defense is good. Now let's get an offensive player. I'm like, oh, we got a new transfer, and it's a defensive player. And I'm like, really? I mean, that's great, but I feel like we're going to be aiming to win 6-3 every game this fall, you know? Yeah. John forgets it's an audio medium and does his.
No, I'm. You set it up. I think, what do we have? I think we have a good defense. We have Tank Bigsby and some veteran offensive linemen, and we don't have a great quarterback or great explosive wide receivers. I think we're going to play a lot of ball possession and low scoring games.
I think that's probably it. Well, now we did talk briefly last episode about changes coming to football scheduling, and sure enough, it happened about as suddenly and comprehensively as we could have ever imagined that would have happened, which is that the NCAA did away the whole you have to have divisions to have a championship. Talk about that a little bit in terms of, like, I mean, the layperson that doesn't know 50 years of SEC and NCAA history, and that's why should somebody? You don't have to know all that, you know. The layperson hearing that would be like, whoop-de-doo, right? Okay, so you can have a playoff game, you can have a conference championship game with playoffs. Oh, and now you can have, I mean, with divisions, and now you can have one without divisions. So what? So tell us, why does this matter? What's the point of all this?
Well, the point is that, number one, the elimination of divisions allows conferences to go to these more flexible schedule models we talked about, because they're not forced into the divisional standings kind of setup. But also, think about this. We're in the SEC West. The SEC West doesn't have to exist anymore.
Ugh.
Okay? Think about, again, the other example people always use is the Big Ten East, right? Maryland and a team that doesn't exist are in the Big Ten East. They don't have to play Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State. God. You know, those teams can be spread out among the other teams in the conference. They can get a much easier schedule. And it's
and I say you
that Georgia's schedule is going to get harder. Florida's schedule is going to get harder. Tennessee's schedule is going to get harder. Auburn's schedule is going to get easier.
Amen.
That's what's coming.
Amen. Amen.
And how many times over the years have we seen the top two teams in the conference be on the same side?
Yeah.
Like it's whoever wins this one game. In the old days, it was Tennessee, Florida.
Yes.
And then it was like
Alabama, LSU.
Alabama, LSU, or Auburn, Alabama. Team goes to the championship game, and they're the best team in the conference. Well, it doesn't have to be that way. Those are the two best teams. They should be in the championship game, even if it's a rematch.
Yes.
So that's what it's going to be. So the NCAA did away with the rule, and immediately the Pac-12 said they were dropping divisions for this season.
This coming season.
2022. Now, they can't change the schedule because it's already set and everybody's already got dates and travel plans, all that. But what they said is there's no divisions. We'll have one standings from top to bottom. The top two teams go to the championship game. So if it's Oregon, Washington, if it's UCLA, Southern Cal, if it's UCLA, Utah, those are the top two teams that are going to play championship.
That's so apt for the Pac-12 because they've had so many bad championship games.
Yes, yes. They have had more crappy conference championship games than anybody.
It's not been a disaster per se, but it has not been the rousing success that it has been in the SEC, for example, just because in the SEC, even when the two best teams are in one division, you can usually find the third or a close third in the other division. So like even if Tennessee and Florida weren't playing each other again, Alabama would be right up there too, or Auburn would be right up there too, or, you know, or even, you know, Arkansas a couple of years was really good. But The Pac-12 was having like one really good team, like Oregon or somebody, and then they'd have to play Arizona State or, you know, somebody that, or Oregon State or somebody that just muddled through and went 7-5 and won the other division. And it's they definitely needed to change that. And I'm very excited, and we'll see how it goes, because is there any sense? Do we have any sense yet as to what, when the SEC might act?
No, I mean, their conference meetings are in a couple of weeks when they go to the beach, and we'll know something then.
Well, if I see them, I'll yell, hey, what's up?
Yeah, okay. Pods. I think, again, I'd love for this to go ahead and go to the pods thing now and do away with divisions, but I think they may wait and time it with whenever Texas or Oklahoma come.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense too. If you're going to, but you know, well, all right, let me put it this way. I could see them kind of doing everything at once, but I could also see an argument that you phase one thing in and then phase the other thing in, and that way you're not trying to do everything at once.
But not too much change.
Yeah, all at the same time. But I mean, but I could also see them just kind of making a whole big production out of the new SEC, you know, 16 teams. No division. Well, I guess really they kind of, with 14, you can't really do pods yet anyway, right? You kind of have to get the other two
you
in.
Sure, you can. You could do it with 12. It doesn't.
Well, I know you can do it with 12, but I mean, 14 is a weird number. It's 14. It's not prime, but it's sub prime.
Well, but again, with 14, you could do an 8-game conference schedule and do the every home and away thing in 4 years.
It's weird. 14 is a weird number for doing funky thing, even thing. You know what I mean? I mean, it's an even number, but it's like barely an even number. Not like 16 that goes 4-4-4-4, you know, or 12 that can go 3-3-3-3. With 14, you got 2-7. They don't have a lot of there's not a lot of ways to evenly divide up 14. When we added A&M and Missouri, I was like, well, cool, but how do you do that, you know, because it's a weird number. It's just strange. So, well, anyway, that's cool, and I'm hoping honestly though, let me ask you this. We haven't really talked about adding Oklahoma and Texas in the sense of what we think about it. We've just kind of reported on it as news. Are you net positive or net negative on adding Oklahoma and Texas? We haven't really talked about it.
No. I mean I'm happy about it. I'm net positive. It's, again, the SEC is brutal. This will make the SEC more brutal.
Yes.
The positive is we get to see, you know, 15 other schools dunk on Texas repeatedly, which will be delightful. Okay.
Yeah,
can't wait till like Mississippi State is running up the score and then doing horns down. Okay. That's going to be an all timer. And I'm excited to play Oklahoma. I think they're really good, and I can't wait to see, you know, Oklahoma playing the other SEC schools.
Well, I was gonna say we've played Texas over the years, so that's not a huge. That's not like we're dying to play Texas because we played them in 83,
84, 87, 91. That was a long time ago. And I remember those games. Nobody else remembers those games.
Man.
So I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be exciting. When Texas runs on the field at Jordan-Hare the first time, I'm going to be excited.
Yeah, yeah. Well, sure. I mean, it's like when we play Clemson or when we play Miami or we play UCLA or whatever, except it won't be like that because we'll be having to play them like they're Texas A&M or Missouri. It'll feel like an out-of-conference game, but it won't be. I'm kind of 75. I think from the beginning I've been 75-25 negative on it. There's 25% of it that I'm like, cool, Oklahoma, Texas. That's prestigious. We've never really played Oklahoma, so I'm excited to kind of get a couple of shots at them here and there, depending on how the schedule works out. So the prestige and the chance to play Oklahoma, those are two of the positives. The fact that it gets us to 16, that's a positive. But honestly, if we were going to go to 16, I'd have rather added Central Florida and South Florida or somebody that's not going to make it worse. It's bad enough, man. And A&M is on the way up, I'm afraid, which we're about to get to here in just a second. I didn't need the job to get harder. I thought the job was hard enough when it went from 10 to 12. Now it's 14, going to be 16 with more. Good gosh, I mean, if you project it forward, that, I mean, even if every team had an even chance of winning the SEC, then once every 16 years we win the SEC. But then on top of that, you got to realize that Alabama wins it a bunch. Georgia's going to be winning it a bunch, I'm afraid, unless something can intervene there. And then you throw in like an Oklahoma or a Texas or somebody else. How many years are we going to have to go between Auburn, for example, or Tennessee or Florida or LSU or whoever winning the SEC again? It's going to be much more. It's going to be almost like winning a national championship to win the SEC.
Yes. Again, this is the scenario, okay? It is going to be super hard.
And meanwhile, what does Oregon have to do to win their conference?
This is the other side. They're going to, the plan is this happens, and then they have an 8-team playoff, and there's four SEC teams in the 8-team playoff. So you finish fourth in the SEC, you're still in the playoff.
Well, a 12-team playoff is what they need. They were absolutely right about the 12-team playoff, because if you do eight, there's no benefit to playing a conference championship game.
No, you're right. They'll go to 12. It'll be 12, and it'll be five SEC teams.
If four SEC teams get in, then why would two of them play each other in a meaningless game? Just skip the conference championship, go straight to the playoffs. All you're doing is giving them a chance to lose again and not make the 4-team playoff. It's just it's pointless.
Or knowing they will both make the playoff, not take the game as seriously.
Right. And see, here's the thing, too. You remember how we decided that the playoffs have completely devalued the bowls? Well, if you expand the playoffs, now they're not only going to devalue the bowls, they're going to devalue the conference championship games. The playoffs, John, the playoffs consume everything else in their wake. That is what happens. They consume everything else until it's regular season and playoffs. That's all anybody cares about. There might still be bowls. There might still be conference championship games. Nobody's going to care. It's just going to be play your regular season and get in the playoffs. That's all anybody's going to care about.
Nobody cares about bowls now.
Yeah, but they did 10 years ago.
No, but they don't now. I mean, that's what it is.
I know. That's what I'm saying. They don't now. And that's going to happen to the conference championship games.
Well, you could make the conference championship games like a round of the playoffs. Even.
Exactly. That's what I was saying. That's why you go to 12. Give a bye to the teams that win a conference championship game. That way it matters.
Yes, and that's what the proposal was.
Right. And people keep saying, you need to go to 8. I'm like, no, you need to go to 12 for reasons we have just elucidated.
Yes.
All right.
So the conference championship game still continues to matter. They pay for it. They pay for the playoff. We make, blah, blah, blah. They're making more money. We're playing 20 games or whatever. So.
Right. Right. Well. So, I guess realistically then, if the SEC does that, what year is Texas and Oklahoma coming in?
25 at the latest.
Okay.
Earlier if they write a big check.
Oh, that's right. They have to play out their string with the
Or give the Big 12 a bunch of money. And it may, and this is where it is, all those other schools are joining the Big 12 before that. So if they don't write a big check and get out, there's going to be a season with Central Florida and Oklahoma and Texas in the Big 12.
It's going to be actually like 12, 14 teams in the Big 12. I like the idea that the Big 12 could have a variety of numbers and it never be 12. There's just something so college football about a conference with a number in its title and it's all kind of different numbers in different years. It just is never 12. I like it a lot. I used to think it was stupid. Now I just think it's the most appropriate thing ever. It's like if the SEC was in the Northwest. It's just, there's no logic or rhyme or reason to it. But anyway, all right. Well, so we haven't really talked about how Auburn benefits from all this other than Georgia plays a harder schedule, for example, right?
And we play an easier schedule. We get more games against South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Missouri, Kentucky.
Hallelujah. Yes, that's what we
need. Less games against, A&M, LSU.
We'll still have Alabama. Probably there. I mean, there's no escaping from them. They're like the herpes of the SEC. You can just never get rid of them. They're always there, making your life miserable. And so, but the rest of them though will kind of rotate around. The proposals we talked about last week, there were some scenarios where you play like three other teams pretty much every year and then it rotates? Or is there a scenario where everybody is different other than maybe one or two?
No, I mean, we talked about pods where it's the four same teams, right?
Right. So, 4-4-4-4.
But the other one is you just have three permanent opponents. So we would have Alabama, Georgia, and pick whoever.
Mississippi State,
Florida, whoever.
Yeah.
Right? And then we play those three teams and then rotate the other five or six SEC teams we play.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Anything else about scheduling and all that? I guess we're just going to wait and see how it plays out, right?
Yeah.
But change is coming.
Let me ask you this question. After Georgia and Alabama, if you could pick who our third permanent opponent would be, who would you pick?
Well, if Georgia and Alabama are our two permanent opponents, my gosh, we're getting a little better, but not a lot better. And so it needs to be somebody. It doesn't need to be LSU or Florida or Tennessee. As much as I'd like to reinstitute our old rivalries, we'll get to play them more anyway, so it kind of takes care of itself. You know what I mean? We'll be playing Florida every other year. We'll be playing Tennessee every other year, so it kind of takes care of itself. So as a permanent one, I would want it to be somebody. I mean, Mississippi State at the worst, at the hardest.
I think Mississippi State is the logical one just because we've played them a ton of times.
Oh, we've always played. They've been on our permanent schedule forever. More than. You know, we've talked about how we didn't used to play Ole Miss hardly at all. We didn't used to play LSU hardly at all. But we always played Mississippi State. Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's right.
What about Georgia Tech? Can we get them back? Play them every
Swanee.
Year?
Swanee.
Oh, well, Swanee. Yeah, Swanee would be great. The University of the South.
I would
totally. Oh, man. All the really good white meat left the SEC except for Vanderbilt. Just sitting there on the platter. Well, we have another topic. That's been in the news that we need to hit on a little bit. And that is that a couple of young coaches by the name of Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher went into the arena and we all heard. That's what we heard. And that would be them really going at each other, weren't they?
They were. It was a little crazy last Friday.
And I guess it's been kind of hashed and rehashed, but what kind of thoughts do you and I have on it, just in brief here?
Again, my basic view is like the Godzilla movie where the guy says, let them fight. let them shoot at each other and throw dirt and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I think the other thing is just that people forget this, but there was a time when the SEC got busted for NCAA violations a lot, and a lot of it was because coaching staffs turned in other coaching staffs.
Yep.
And then Mike Five became SEC commissioner, and he put his thumb on all the teams and coaches and said, no more ratting each other out. You're never going to do that again. Stop it. And then never happened again. You didn't see SEC football teams get on probation after about 2003 or whatever, because he ended all that stuff. And he retired, and you know, his successor doesn't have the same ability to put the teams and schools in line. You saw that when LSU and Florida were going yeah, yeah, yeah about the hurricane rescheduling a while ago. And he made them apologize to each other, and he gave the official finger wag at them, but I don't think this is over. And now I'm, you know, like everybody else, I'm excited to see these two teams play. That's kind of my view of it.
I've noticed over the years that leagues and conferences tend to have one of two different types of commissioners. There's the visionary leader and there's the bean counter. Mm-hmm. And usually the visionary leader sets things up to a certain level of success and then retires, and the bean counter comes in and kind of handles the money aspects, but doesn't have the same moral leadership abilities necessarily. You know what I mean? Like the NFL kind of had that happen. The NBA's kind of had that happen time and here and there. You know, you go from the charismatic person that can kind of make the teams or institutions behave a certain way to the person that's just in it to get to negotiate a better TV deal or something. And they don't always know how to handle the disputes, the conflicts. the rivalries, the attitudes and all. So
that's fair.
Yeah. And I mean, you're talking about people that are very opinionated, very powerful, with big followings, particularly with Saban and Jimbo Fisher. They make a lot of money to do what they do, and they feel like nobody can contradict them, you know. And it's kind of like when they go out on a limb and say something like that, you're kind of like, whoa, that it just, you feel your buddy in the barbershop or whatever say stuff like that all the time, but you don't expect it from people of that magnitude in public.
Well, it was surprising and refreshing to have two coaches be honest about how they felt about a topic for 5 minutes.
That's true.
You know, a dramatic change from the world we live in, which is where college football coaches aren't honest most of the time,
right,
about what they think about stuff.
That's right. It's so refreshing and horrifying at the same time. I mean, all right, so for us as Auburn people, seeing Jimbo and Saban go at each other, it's kind of like the Nazi-Soviet non-aggression pact broke down in Operation Barbarossa, you know. And you look at that and go, okay, they can just keep fighting, right? That's fine. We'll just sit back here with popcorn while they hammer. Or I guess like the Iran-Iraq war would be a good example for it, you know, where you're like, you know, on the one hand, you feel bad for the collateral damage, but on the other hand, those two armies bashing each other in the head. I don't, you know, I'm not going to hurry and jump in. You know, if two schools of piranha are fighting, I'm not going to jump into the water in the middle of them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, 100%. There's no reason to. But also, it's a little bit like we're not recruiting well enough that we're going to get accused of cheating by these people.
That's like that reminds. Now, all right, here you go. 1992, you know our historical allusions in this show. 1992, Democratic primary, it was Bill Clinton and Jerry Brown, governor of California. But Pete Tsongas, senator from Massachusetts, was just this little Muppet-looking guy that was running. Well, they're in a big televised debate. Clinton and Jerry Brown are just like hammering each other, just dog-cussing each other, right? And Tsongas is standing there on the end. He wasn't in the middle position. He was on the end. And so later in the press conference, they said, what did you think about the way that those two were behaving, Senator? And he said, the big problem I had with it, I was on the end. And you're showing the two of them, and I'm out there on the end. He said, I wanted to kind of run in between them and wave my arms. So I feel like
Brian Harsin needs to do that.
Harsin needed to run in between them and be like, hey, War Eagle. Get Alan Green to run in there and wave the big Auburn flag. You know, hey, while y'all are paying attention to these two guys, perhaps you'd like to come check out the Plains. But is there a winner or a loser to that little battle other than the fans getting to enjoy it?
I don't think so. I mean,
is it going to result in any changes or anything, or is it just them letting off steam?
Well, we have seen over the years Nick Saban whine about the rules.
Yes.
And do this. Is this what you want college football to be?
I was just thinking.
Kind of thing.
Is this what we want?
This was that exact speech.
Yeah.
When he followed up, he said,
that's
okay.
Right.
And I think the message is Alabama has not revved up their recruiting practices to the current NIL maximum effectiveness level. Okay. And he's like, you sure? Because we're going to go. And that's what's going to happen. The other thing the NCAA did away with the set of divisions is the cap of signees for class to be 25. So a team could sign 40 players now. Okay, you could still only have 85 players on your roster. But and it was a good reason because there were some schools that had been decimated by transfers, and they couldn't catch up if they were signing 25 and then you had, you know, another 10 guys leave each other. Then you could never get to a safe number of players to play.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to be able to sign 30 or 35 guys.
That's good.
Right? And so it is a good thing that way. But what's going to happen is the maximization of like a roster like Alabama, where they're going to say, your guy number 85, you're not good enough. You need to transfer and go play at some other school so we can sign another five-star next year. Mm. That is 100% going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that and the Alabama's NIL getting better and coming back at A&M on that way is what's going to happen. And then also just, that game itself is in Tuscaloosa this year, and we should all buy popcorn ahead of time.
Oh, no doubt. Well, I mean, you know, the first thing that Saban was complaining about was,
but here, there are no civilized rules.
which is what he believed there should be. And he looks at Jimbo in the SEC and he says, "Hey, Jimbo,
you sit at my table."
Right. I mean, of course. But now Jimbo is like,
"Not for while you can, the monkey boy."
Three in a row. It's
like, I had it ready, man. Come on.
Fired.
Ah, that's right. That's right. So I could keep going, but I'll leave it with that. So, yeah. So really interesting stuff there. One other thing, and before we, well, actually, we got our football position review, our group position group review coming up. We're going to, in a second here, we're going to do, who are we doing this week? What position?
We're doing the edge outside linebackers.
Oh, outside linebackers. Okay. But before that, I saw an interesting little, I just want to run through this really quickly. I saw an interesting, article on how the 2018 Auburn class panned out. And I'm just going to run through this really quickly. And if you have any comments, so I don't know what the order is, but here are the players we signed in 2018 and kind of what became of them. All right, real quick. Joey Gatewood, of course, ended up going to Kentucky and now he went to Central Florida and now he's turned into a wide receiver. So Joey Gatewood, I mean, Matthew Hill, the receiver, I thought he was going to be great for us. Ended up going to South Florida and playing defensive back. Coinis Miller, defensive tackle, transferred to Jackson State and then transferred again. Harold Joyner, the big, tall running back, went to Michigan State. The first player from that class signed that finished at Auburn was Smoke Monday, safety Smoke Monday. So he signed with the Saints. Anthony Schwartz, of course, played 3 years with us and went to the NFL. Seth Williams played, I guess, 3 years with us and went to the NFL, but he had one reception last year in two games for 34 yards. So, Zakobe McClain, the linebacker, he played with us. Asa Martin, running back. We had a lot of running backs in this class. We had three. I'm going to get to another one in a second. So, Asa Martin ended up going to Memphis. Jamian Sherwood played for us. Christian Tutt.
Again, Jamian Sherwood, again, a successful player, went on to get drafted, played in the NFL. So
yeah. Christian Tutt is now playing for the New Jersey Generals in the USFL. Oh, hold that thought for just a minute. Michael Harris, linebacker. He's been suspended from football-related activities by Eastern Kentucky. That's not good. Richard Jabuner, linebacker, went to Troy. Daquan Newkirk, defensive tackle, went to Florida. Sean Shivers, running back, went to Indiana. Shedrick Jackson is, we're depending heavily on next year. You had to go all the way down this far to find another player that's, in fact, he's one of three players from the 18 recruiting class that's still on the roster right now. Three from the 2018 class. When we say that Gus brought in top 10 classes, but you wouldn't know it, this is what we mean, right? He brought in top 10 classes, and there's three of them left. Well, I mean, that's the 18, so the 19, 20, 21, 22. They'd be seniors this year.
And have they developed? Are they
No,
better?
Yeah, not again, not at all. Jaleel Irvin, offensive lineman, is still here. Excuse me. Caleb Johnson, defensive end, sat on the bench a lot. Cameron Stutz, offensive lineman, is still here. Colby Fuqua, transferred to Jacksonville State. Roger McCreary was the third lowest rated player in our 2018 recruiting class, the 989th player nationally, and he became a consensus All-American and was a second round pick by the Tennessee Titans. How about that?
It's pretty damning, the overall thing. There's a coaching change in there too, which impacts it, but there was a lot of guys who aren't big-time players.
Well, I liked how they put it. They said, while he was not the crown jewel on paper in 2018, Roger McCreary certainly is the best player out of this class today. How about that? That's pretty cool.
100%.
Josh Marshall, linebacker, went to Northern Arizona. Aaron Sipos went to the Philadelphia Eagles. That's it. So what do you think about that 2018 class?
I mean, when you read it down like that, it's very disappointing. Yeah. There's a lot of guys I was very excited about at many positions that didn't pan out. but also that haven't made big differences other places. It's not like they got away. Yeah. So I think some of it was talent identification and some of it was talent development. We should have brought those guys in and developed them in the system that we had and just to, for them to fulfill their potential. And we didn't do that. And so it was disappointing.
How does Joey Gatewood end up back with Gus again?
Because Gus and them like him and he needs a home to play football.
He left Auburn because Gus wouldn't play him. And then he went to Central Florida and Gus wouldn't play him again. And now he's a receiver.
And they didn't play him.
Right. It's just crazy.
Maybe he's not actually an SEC quarterback. So.
I think maybe that's the upshot of all of this. All right, let's see. Before we get to position review,
this is the USFL report.
Birmingham Stallions 6-0, undefeated, only undefeated team in the league, is looking good.
This has been the USFL report.
All right, there you go. People tune into this show for two reasons, Auburn football and USFL updates.
Oh, where you go, man? We'll talk to you next week.
Oh, boy. I have been enjoying it, though. I had to say that. This was funny. So, they play all the games in Birmingham at that protective stadium. It is a coincidence that Birmingham's only undefeated team. They play all their home games. But they had a rain delay, a storm delay, lightning delay on Saturday, I think. And so they started showing another game, and I'm like, they switched to another game in this league. Wait a minute. It's in the same city. It's in the same stadium. How are they doing that? I didn't realize it was on tape delay. So I'm thinking, how do you go to a different game in the same stadium when it's the storm? That threw me. Let's see. We've got to talk about outside linebackers, right? Edge. So who left?
So again, the way we do this is who's left, who's on the depth chart, who's coming in. So who left is Romello Height, who felt like, especially early last year, showed some real ability. He transferred. He signed with Southern Cal.
That's not bad.
He must have see how he does out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So returning at this position, and one of the reasons he left, I think, is he wasn't going to start for sure. Because returning, we have Derek Hall and Echo Leota, who are both seniors and are, really, really good players. And then behind them, we have Dylan Brooks, who's a redshirt freshman. Again, the guy that kind of temporarily signed with Tennessee and then came to Auburn. Future, but we really only have three guys at this position for two spots. And so there's some of the other linebackers could play here. Joko Willis and some of the other ones, and they will have to. And we've got a couple of walk-ons at this position too. But this is a spot where you look, Echo Leota and Derek Hall. Derek Hall is going to be gone because he's going to get drafted next year. But Echo Leota, I don't think he has another year with the COVID thing. So I think he's gone too. We need more players at this position. We need several guys in this incoming signing class, and maybe a transfer at this position. So this is a spot to keep your eye on. But let me say, the other side is this. Derek Hall's one of the impact players on the whole team. The guy's a difference maker. Echo Yoda's a solid player, makes plays, gets around and does stuff. And Derek Hall, I think, could be an all-SEC kind of player.
Yeah.
So I think this position overall is a strength, but – you worry about injury here, you worry about depth, and you worry about the future.
Injury would be devastating. Well, I think that's one of the things about easy transfers that you're seeing is that in days gone by, if there were a bunch of good players at one position, then the question became how do we use them since they're on the team, and how do we keep them happy while using them in certain ways? Now the question is where are they going to go? And so the programs that can say, if you're willing to sit on the bench here, we'll get you in the NFL, are going to have an advantage over the programs that say, man, we desperately need, somebody to come in. It's different. It's just a different world now. And I don't think it favors us as much as maybe it used to, I'm afraid.
I agree.
I don't like it. Okay, so what about new guys? Did you?
Nope.
There's not. Nope, right?
There's nobody.
There's not. So. Okay, I was just gonna say. I was like, wait, did I miss something or no? That isn't. No, that's not good. So.
No, no.
Oh boy. All right. So who are we talking about next time?
I'm gonna do safeties next time.
All right. We must be getting close to the end.
We are getting close to that.
Yeah. All right. Very good. This was a good feature. I'm glad we did this. All right. So we've got a guess the game coming up from Jared, and we've got our listener questions. But first, we have to remind you, of course, our program does not have any ads. We depend upon our listeners to keep us going, especially in these lean times. You know, I keep an eye on our download numbers, our statistics. And this is the time of the year when the numbers really drop off a little bit. We've got about a third of our listeners in the summer and the spring, as we do in the fall and the winter when football and basketball are going. And I understand that. I mean, it makes perfect sense, and I'm not complaining. I'm glad that we have a base of hardcore listeners that enjoy our show. But we need to make sure we keep the show going. So if you haven't already, please go to www.auwishbone.com and become a patron, become part of the show. And in just a second here, you're going to see what I mean when I say become part of the show, because our listeners, our patrons, truly are part of this show with their creativity and their entertainment value. So what we do is we thank them by name, and you can put whatever you want into the name thing, and I have to read it. And sometimes people even include sound effects from the soundboard, which is always entertaining. So we have to thank Samuel Salvatore, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Dr. Crackham, Bradley Blackman, Daniel Odom, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Fan at KSC, It's Always Hate Week, Logan Chilton. All right, Logan, I hear you. Matthew Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kangian, Ben Bloodworth. No, Ben, I'm sorry, Ben Bloodworth. Bruce Isn't Harsin' Around. Chris Hilton, Assistant Manager, Jones Barbecue and Foot Massage. No, I don't.
Congratulations, Chris, on the promotion.
Yeah, it's funny because normally I would have a sound effect like that, you know, just standing by, but I was not prepared for it. So,
Jones Barbecue and Foot Massage. Jones Barbecue and Foot Massage.
Sometimes you have to just do it on the fly. I'm glad he's an assistant manager. Chris is always good at working with us on his name on there. He was Chris the Hilton for a while. Chris Thrash, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, David Hegler, Earl Ricks, Eric Morgan, Bobby, George Gaston. I'm a failure. I will have adult grandchildren before the insulation goes in. I was just telling John before the show that I need to get that insulation installed because I can hear a lot of racket going on upstairs above the
pool. You're not a failure.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Old Mrs. Miracle Medical Staff, Algo, Rhythm and Blues, Paul Miles, Phil Davis, pick your fighter, Saban or Fisher. Ooh, wah, ooh, wah. There we go. Now it sounds right. Uh-oh, I lost my place. Ah, here we go.
Like an unwanted neighbor that comes over and visits.
From the Weather Channel, Reynolds Wolf.
Thundersnow.
I just can't get enough of that one. Thank you, Reynolds. Rich Reimer, Sarah Brown, Steve Harlan. Thank goodness for Win Carroll because...
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
That's true. That's true. Theodore Gary, War Eagle Always, amen to that. Warhammer 6, WDE Richie.
Just two little country kids outside misbehaving.
Doom, doom, doom. Wes Atkinson, plus. Will John and Van have a 10-year anniversary special? I think we answered this last time that we'll do something, right? I think that we said we will do something. But that'll be September, October time. William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Body. We should reenact our first episode.
We could rewatch a game from 2012 and record an episode.
Oh my gosh.
Oh. It would be funny at this point, though, right?
That, I would be screaming.
Well, we got a cage strong enough to hold an animal like you here.
As I tried to get out, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I don't know about that. William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, and they're all so creative. And joining me, as always, is my patron, Patrick Williams.
Please clap.
There we go. Good job, Patrick. Auburn Blue, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, champion of the bowl pick'em, Brandon Smith, Carter Glaus, Cato the Barner, Colby Butler, Corey Smyer, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Die Bama, Helping Van Upgrade His Insulation. I sure do need it. Hugh Anderson, I think I think Van's insulation is just fine.
Please clap.
Josh Teal, it sure has become a point of conversation on this program. People are like, what are they even talking about as insulation? And I believe me, I understand. Kevin Kenoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Papa Todd, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Tim Pittman, time flies like an arrow, fruit flies like a banana. I can't argue with that either. Timothy, Tony Perry, Weagle 87. Oh, Mark always wants me to insert my favorite soundboard audio. And what have I not done in a while? I haven't done...
Hey, there goes Tank Man.
Goes Tank. I like that one. Where did it go? Aha. AJ Herman.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
There we go. Alex Nguyen, Ben Amos, Ben Riggis, Brian Albanese, C. Braun, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Colonel Dad, Construction Tiger, and finally, Daniel Barnett, Elizabeth Donald.
We got to get better at celebrating.
I want early access to the basketball book. I hear you, man. We're working on it. Oh, here's a great one, John. I'll sell my Patreon name for a lucrative NIL arrangement.
Nice.
So, yeah, send us your NIL offers, and I'll forward them here. I'll buy this for $1. James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, Jeremiah Schumann, John Samuel Schenker, Jingleheimer Schmidt, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, John Soundboard, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kenneth Brent Rains.
Someone knows. God knows.
A.K.A. Auburn Dad for life. Loving Auburn means you have to...
smoke weed every day.
I didn't know that, but again, what can we do? Mark Squire, MVP, Captivating Kathy Bright. Oh, dang it. Kathy sent me a whole list of sound bites that we could use for her, and it's on my phone, and I haven't been home, so we'll get that set up for the next episode. But Kathy, I'm going to give you one this week just for the fun of it. How about...
and March Madness, let's shock the world!
There we go. Everybody likes that one, Kathy, so there you go. But I'll get yours. She sent me some Lord of the Rings ones, which were very appropriate because she's a big Lord of the Rings fan. Paul Bankson, Robert Drain, Royce Alvarez, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky having trouble with my bracket.
Someone knows. God knows.
Sports Illustrated's Auburn Elvis, Stephen Thompson, the Slinko family. This name is brought to you by Bubba's Discount Tire and Tax Services. I like it. Trevor Johnson, TV's Darren Pyle. Oh, congratulations, Darren. Brant Rumble, Chris, and our one-time and anonymous donors. And I'm going to close that window out because we have to go to Guess the Game. I guess I'll give a quick fantasy update. I know nobody wants to hear a long thing on this, but I believe... oh, it logged me out. Dang it. Well, I'll just say very quickly that we had the Spanish Grand Prix this past weekend, and my two teams, one is a Red Bull team and one is a Ferrari team, and either one of those teams does good or the other one does good, but it's never both, right? And so let's see. I've got Daniel O is in first place. Eric M, I guess Eric Morgan, in second. Alexandra Ringer is in third. Eric M's second team is in fourth. Daniel O's second team is in fifth. So the two of them are kind of dominating the top five. You, sir, John Ringer, are in sixth. Look at Team Vidav. How do you pronounce that?
I don't even know. It's just, it's Italian for drive really fast.
Oh, I like it. Good deal. All right. And then Alexandra's second team is in seventh, but here's the movement going on. Eighth and ninth. My eighth place team at the beginning of the season was in 17th place. And it has moved, it finished, my eighth place team has finished first or second the last 3 weeks in a row and has climbed from 17th up to eighth. So we're going to see. Now, Monaco is different, of course, because Monaco is basically a parade and it all just comes down to who qualifies well. And of course, who's been qualifying well is Charles Leclerc. Charles Leclerc. But we'll see. We'll see. All right. We have a guess the game. So are you ready?
Bring it on.
Hello, Van, John, the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jarrett Albrecht, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game number 53. Guess the Game 53 is brought to you by AJ Herman. So let's give a listen to what AJ sent in.
Pivotal point of the game right here. And
number 8, their leading receiver. Not much action tonight.
Intercepted at the 12. There's a flag down back at the 10. And still on his feet. One man to beat.
There's another flag down.
There's a flag back at the 5. And also one near midfield.
But the fourth turnover of the night for.
All right, guys, I'll see you in the hint file.
Oh, man. There's a lot of clues in there, but I don't know if I can make any sense out of any of them.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. First, announcers, as normal. That was the former Notre Dame announcer, coach, as Bob Davey, as the analyst. And Mark Jones, I think, is the other guy.
Davey so. Jones Locker, yes.
So an ESPN game, and not a super recent one, right?
Yeah, that's probably 10 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say more than 5 years ago, I think. So maybe 10 years ago-ish. Mm-hmm. And so a weird play at the end of the game.
An interception?
Where there was an interception, but also maybe there was penalties, and then they weren't sure if people were down.
Probably a night game, and it was at home.
Why do you say that? Because the band?
It sounded Auburn-ish. It didn't sound like it was in somebody else's stadium.
Agree.
Okay.
Agree.
I mean,
beyond
that could be a lot of things. It could be a lot. I mean, it's surely not the West Virginia 09 game, right? Because there was no mention of the rain and all that kind of stuff. But I feel like we did intercept that dude a couple of times. They had that big, bulky quarterback.
Yep.
All right. That's a possibility, but. It seems like everything to do with that game always involves the rain. It never really involves like just some random interception or whatever and flags.
We had a couple of LSU games that period where they brought some mediocre quarterbacks to Jordan
Hare. Yeah. I don't feel like we have enough information from that clip to really narrow it down. All right, go into the hint file, Jared.
Gentlemen, let's get rid of those bleeps and give it a listen.
Pivotal point of the game right here.
And Ulrich Garnett, number 82. Their leading receiver, not much action tonight.
Brown. Intercepted at the 12. McFadden.
Walter McFadden.
There's a flag down back of the 10. And McFadden still on his feet. One man to beat.
That was a long delay.
There's a flag back at the 5, and also one near midfield.
But the fourth turnover of the night for West Virginia.
Yeah, that's it. We were on the right track.
There's some good clues in there. I will see you in the answer file.
Yeah, we got it.
I knew when Cindy said Brown, I knew you were right because that was that quarterback's name.
Yeah, I felt like it. But yeah, we got it West Virginia before they said it. So that felt just the only puzzle left to me is, and by the way, that was a good one, because, like I said, everything about that game usually references the rain, and that whole clip didn't reference the rain, so we had to kind of guess based on the game rather than on the conditions, and that was good.
Yes.
But the thing that got me was that, like, McFadden intercepts it, and then it's like 10 seconds go by, and then it's like, hey, he's still on his feet. I'm like, what's he been doing? I kind of want to see the video now. What was he doing all that time that he was still on his feet? That was weird. All right, so I think we got it, but let's go ahead. Let's do 09. Let's get the answer from
all there. Right, John Van, the correct answer you were looking for is Auburn playing West Virginia in the 2009 rain game. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure we've used that game before, but I don't think we used that play. But you know what? Either way, I just appreciate A.J. Herman sending that play in. If you've got a play for Guess the Game like A.J. did, you can send it to me. Jared Albrick. I am at Yard Sale Artist. Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. It is all at Yard Sale Artist. Or you can email me directly at Jared. That's J-A-R-R-O-D at theyardsaleartist.com. Hey, and while you're at www.theyardsaleartist.com, maybe check out some of my Auburn works over there. Ha ha, you didn't know this was a commercial for me. All right, let's cue my outro.
As much as I hate the idea of being a van guy, it's a lot better than hanging out here with the nocturnal dirt people.
War Eagle.
Can't argue with that. Can't argue with that. No,
nocturnal dirt people.
Jared, you are fully entitled to plug your great Auburn work because you do such great work for us. We appreciate it. All right. Last stop on the AU Wishbone train for the night.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right. What we got going on this week in the mailbag?
All right. First question from frequent question asker Bill Miner. Guys, along with the what if scenario, which bowl game loss, non 2013 title game, annoyed you the most and you wish you could flip the result? To me, it's either the 2000 Citrus versus Michigan, because I had to buy a buddy an ice cream, and 2014 Outback, since I got annoyed of hearing Barry Alvarez coming in for a single game, and Wisconsin annoys me in general.
Yeah, if I could change the outcome of one bowl game, oh, man. I mean, the more recent ones, the Central Florida one, I hated losing to them.
Yes, I hated that team going out that way.
Yeah. And the team that lost to Oklahoma the year before, too, it would have been nice to take, that quarterback,
Baker
take down
Mayfield.
Oklahoma, Baker Mayfield, Because we were in, that team, if they'd had both of our running backs, we'd have been in that game, but we were in the quarterback. Everybody was, the whole offense was banged up for that game. But, Gus lost almost every bowl game he coached, so it's hard
to. You got targets to pick from.
You really have a target-rich environment there. But if you go back before that, we were on a nice little run there. The 2005 Wisconsin one made me mad just because that was a good team and they ended the season kind of.
Yes. They deserve better at the end. Yes.
Yeah,
I agree.
They did. But I agree. I was at the 2000 Citrus Bowl that he talked about with Michigan and we played them really tough. I remember what they did was we were hanging with them the whole game, and finally they just started using their big offensive line and just running the ball right up the middle on us, and we really couldn't stop them, and they kind of shoved it down our throats. But that was a good game. Yeah, I mean, other than that, you had to go all the way back to you'll agree with me on this one, 1988 Florida State.
Oh,
that's the one you want to reverse, don't you?
Yes.
I want that game to end with Reggie Slack connecting with Lawyer Tillman in the end zone, and we beat Florida State 14-13.
All right, so we're not recording a show next week, but this is my question for you and the listeners for 2 weeks from now. Okay.
Got it.
I hate Florida State because of that game, and Deion Sanders in particular because of that game. There recently was a guy who went on ESPN. I know you don't care about the NBA. The Phoenix Suns lost a playoff series. Their best player is a guy named Chris Paul. This other guy who really doesn't like Chris Paul got up early and went on ESPN the next morning, like at dawn, to say bad things about Chris Paul because he hates him so much.
Wow.
And it made me think, like, who what college football team or player do you hate enough to wake up early in the morning and put in a bunch of extra effort to say bad things about? And that's what I want to talk about to you now, because I can definitively say I hate Florida State that much.
I like it. I like that. That's good. All right, folks, you got your assignment. I'm looking forward to hearing what everybody has to say. That's good. That's
and
good.
I want to know, and you and I should be able to pull some deep cuts out of this about some players that, you know, I don't want to hear Alabama. Man. I want to hear, like, okay, what player?
Yeah, I like it.
All right. Next question comes from the Slinko family, which says, hello, gentlemen.
Hey.
Here's a what-if question I'd like to get your take on. What if in 2019 Kelly Bryant chose to transfer to Auburn instead of choosing to disappear in Missouri? This means Bo Nix doesn't have to play as a true freshman, and it means a true freshman QB doesn't have to play in insane atmospheres at Gainesville and Baton Rouge. We have a game-tested quarterback at the helm with that amazing defense. We definitely beat Florida and LSU. The Georgia game is close. We pull that out. Kelly wasn't the greatest passer, but he was better than Bo as a freshman, and Kelly was a fantastic running QB that actually fits the system that Gus wanted to run. We go to the playoff as the number one seed in the country at smash Oklahoma. Then we face a great Clemson team for the championship. I think we pull out a really tight game, and Kelly Bryant gets to stick it to an obnoxious Dabo who refused to give him a championship ring for the previous season. I think the 2019 team with monster Derek Brand up front was that close. What do you think?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I think we forget how good the 2019 team was just because they were a lot like the 2006 team. They had such a great defense and just not quite enough offense at times.
Fair.
And yeah, and if I remember Kelly. It took me a minute to remember who Kelly Bryant was. He was the Clemson quarterback that got dislodged by the guy with the hair, right?
Yes. And he went to Missouri and was pretty good at Missouri, you know.
Yeah.
But it was Missouri, right? So I mean, they went 8-4 or whatever.
He basically went in the witness protection program.
So, but again, I'm looking at his stats for that season. Listen to this: 62% passing, 15 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, good QB rating. You know.
Yeah.
Also ran a good bit. You know, ran well. So.
Yeah.
You know. I averaged like 25 yards a game rushing, so a difference maker. And I like the idea that the veteran quarterback with that defense, you know, definitely would have won at least one of those games on the road for sure.
Yeah, I don't know about the whole go undefeated, win the national championship thing, but I mean, it's not completely inconceivable because they did have a defense that was capable of doing that if we could just scored a few more points. I mean, we definitely beat, just with a less than double-digit points, we beat LSU and we beat Georgia. And then, you know, Katie barred the door at that point.
All right. That was a good question. I like it. Another good
scenario. The what-ifs right, kind of been blowing up. I like it.
Our next question is from Cato the Barner, who says, you did it, fellas. You made it to the end. Our season is wrapped up. So after today, it's summer vacation on me complaining about Auburn softball. Final stats. Auburn finished the season with a record of 5-14 against ranked opponents. In the 2021 and 2022 seasons, Auburn has a combined record of 1-6 in postseason play.
Ouch.
Only one of those 6 losses came against a ranked team.
Oh.
Of the 4 SEC tournaments in the Mickey Dean era, Auburn has been knocked out in the first game in 3 of them.
Mm.
And in the year of our Lord 2022, 5 years into his tenure, Auburn has given Mickey Dean a contract extension. Not a 1 or 2 year prove me wrong extension, a full 4 year contract extension. At least we're a Stallions podcast, isn't that right now? Tony, thanks, Kate of the Barker.
Don't make me hit that button again. No, that's weird. That's almost Malzahn like in a way. A giant contract extension off of a couple of things.
All right. In a related note, here's the mailbag question from Auburn Elvis, who says,
yeah.
Dear John and Van, I think the guy who doesn't like the softball coach might be right. So what do we do now?
Yeah, I think we need to hire him. I mean, gosh, it's like we've been in the center of this softball controversy, and I don't even really understand it or know what's going on, but it sounds good to me.
I'm
going to
make an analogy that,
okay,
and Cato and other softball people can correct me, is a little bit of kind of Jeff Lebo to Mickey Dean.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Clean up against the soft teams.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't play well against the really tough teams.
I like it. All right. Helps me understand. So yeah, good.
All right. Oh, yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong. Next question comes from Rusty Owens, who says, this is called Prediction for the Future.
All right.
And he says, okay, I started back at the beginning of the year with an email about a feeling I had about Saban retiring. I know you guys have brought up before the Saban versus Fisher dueling press conferences. On a side note, nothing will ever come close to listening to sports media have to choose which side they were on, in addition to listening to Bama fans act like they'd never had to buy a player.
That was the best part. Gold
for a 24-hour period.
Oh, my gosh. That was the best part of it all. Was Alabama like, well, we don't pay. I believe the quote was, you were staring down the barrel of the death penalty a while back.
That's right. So then... However, something has been different this week is the number of media personalities speculating on how long Saban will be around. They compared it to Jay Wright at Villanova and Coach K at Duke, and some people have even speculated that Dabo may leave for greener pastures. I don't want to make this about Saban completely, but do you think the transfer portal, NIL, and the awakening of programs in Texas and California change the landscape and force established coaches to get out while the getting is good?
I think that I would totally understand if Saban was like, you know, this has so dramatically changed the playing field that I'm too old to start over with a whole new thing now. I mean, he's really getting close to old man yells at cloud, you know, here, and he's always been able to adapt. That's, you know, he's kind of like Bryant. Kind of like Bear Bryant, you know, you get them good players, but they also have been able to adapt to the times. And, you know, Saban has done that. He complained about our offense, and then he copied it and did it even better, you know, brought in all those receivers and everything. So
I just want to point out, you know, he's –
Well, I guess can he adapt one more time is the question, is what I'm driving
at. Sure, I think he can. But, again,
does he
70.
Want to?
Right. He's 70. Okay.
And rich.
Yeah. You know, Lincoln Riley's 38, Kirby's 46, Ryan Day's 43.
Mm-hmm.
So again, Brian Kelly at LSU is 10 years younger than Saban. If it wasn't for what's his name coming back in North Carolina, Saban would be the oldest coach in Division I by a long shot. So.
Yeah.
So again, I thought about this too when Saban made those comments, like, you know, maybe he's saying the stuff because he's getting ready to walk away. And I do think the amount of change matters, but I also think he's kind of a robot and he'll just keep doing it. So,
no, I agree. He'll just all adapt right, and continue. He's like the thing. He just adapts, changes shape, and continues on devouring.
I just think the thing I think about all the time is that man eats the exact same thing for lunch every day.
It's true. He does.
Because he doesn't want to spend time thinking about lunch and making a decision about a different lunch. All right. The last question tonight comes from Danny Flack, who's a what if follow up from our one from last week about Petrino Gate. And he says, so if Jet Gate had been a success, would Senator Petrino have driven his motorcycle into the Washington Monument?
Gosh, that is deeply
disturbing.
That makes so many leaps in alternate history. I followed it. I was just kind of embarrassed with myself that I was so easily able to follow it. But I knew exactly what he meant. Yeah, does Senator Petrino drive his motorcycle into the Washington Monument? That's so good. Holy cow, that's so good. I don't think he would have been at Auburn long enough to get popular enough to get elected senator. That's the thing. Even if he wanted to, he'd have been gone after 2 or 3 years to the Falcons or wherever. Was he at the Falcons before he was at Arkansas or after?
Yes. He left the Falcons mid-season, left a post-it note in the locker room, and went to Arkansas. He didn't tell the players. He left a note and walked away.
Yeah. Yeah. I know he was at Louisville twice. Was he at the Falcons twice? No.
No. No.
Okay, so he was the Falcons.
Louisville. He left Auburn,
went to Falcons.
Louisville to the Falcons.
Went to Arkansas.
To Arkansas.
And then Louisville.
to Louisville. Louisville, the second Louisville time was after the motorcycle crash.
Right. They're the only ones who take him back. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, yeah, he wouldn't have stayed long if he had avoided all the bad stuff and gone to Auburn in 03, was it? No, what was
it? It was
04 is the year he would have started. It was after 03. So 04, we would have had Petrino. He'd have been there 04, 05, maybe 06, and then he'd have been off to he'd have been coming from Louisville, so we hadn't been to the Falcons yet. So he'd been off to the NFL.
That's right.
He'd been off the NFL after 2 or 3 years at Auburn. There's no doubt. All right. Is that it?
That's it.
You know what? I got to thank our listeners for sending in some really good questions this week. We're getting a lot of the what if thing, which is kind of fun, nice little off-season thing, and we're getting some other good questions. They did a good job.
And I want you to remember my question about which specific players and coaches you hate. It could be football. It can be basketball.
Oh, man. There's just so many choices.
Wimp Sanderson qualifies.
Oh, Wimp. Yeah. He wore Bear's hat as his sport coat, which I always thought was funny. All right. Any final thoughts other than get your figure out who you hate? It's kind of reverse Valentine's Day.
And, you know, enjoy your summer. Enjoy your vacation. Well-earned.
Appreciate it. I'll be hammering away on the Sword and Sorcery anthology so that I can then clear out the space to finish up the basketball book when we move on to that pretty soon. So, I have a note that's coming back to me about the time I get back from my trip. So that'll be good.
That's right.
All right. Everybody, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.